Heather Gray, the Lyme boss here. I'm a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner and bioenergetic practitioner. And maybe you feel like crap. And that's why you need to listen to these high-level experts that I have on my show every week. Whether it's Lyme disease, mold toxicity, autoimmune, mental health issues, weight, cancer, you fill in the blank. I guarantee you, you will find something inspiring, entertaining, something that'll give you hope, practical advice that you can take home at the end of every episode. I highly thank you for joining us, and you're going to just love this next guest. Today, we're talking to Neil Donald Walsh, a personal hero of mine, author of Conversations with God, and then we'll be talking about his new book, God Talk, a Common Sentience series that he's got out here. So I'm so excited for you guys to get to know Neil. Let's welcome him to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Heather. It's lovely to be with you, and I appreciate the opportunity. How may I serve you?
Oh, my gosh. Let's start off at the beginning. Like, I know you've probably told the story a kajillion times, but how did this all come about?
Well, you know, I had the triple whammy from life 30 years ago. The relationship that I was in, my marriage, was not working. And so my wife and I agreed that we would no longer continue in our relationship. It wasn't a lot of anger or hatred or upset. We did it in a very civilized way, but it was still the end of our marriage. And we had children. And so it was a very sad, sad experience in my life. But 5 days later, after I moved out, and I agreed to just, I said, honey, I'll find a little place to live. And I did. But 5 days later, I lost my job. The corporation that I was working for said, and they told me, my boss said, I hate to lose you. Of all the people I would not want to lose, you'd be at the top of the list. But I don't want to lose you. But he said, we've got orders from corporate headquarters to downsize because we need to, you know, to stop the loss of our money. And you were the last person in, most recent hire. So you have no seniority, last person in, first person out. So we have to let you go. So now I lose my relationship and I lose my job in the same 5 day period. But wait, the world wasn't done with me yet.
But wait, there's more.
I'm driving down the road, going to an interview for another job. And I know I'm going to get the job because I got all the qualifications. But I never got to the interview because an elderly gentleman, around 85 or 87 years old, made a left turn in front of my car as I was oodling down the road. I wasn't even going fast. I'm a very slow driver. I was doing like 26 miles an hour. But he misjudged the distance between the driveway he wanted to turn into in my car and smashed right into my car. And it wasn't a little fender bender. It was a major automobile crash. I mean, he totaled my car and almost totaled me because, as you can imagine, he turned, made a left turn. So he's turning right into the driver's side, right into the end. And you know, I wound up with a broken neck. They took me to the hospital, and then I found out that how serious it really was, because it turned out that it wasn't just a hairline fracture. I remember the wording on the x-ray, you know, technician's report to this day, because it was so serious. It said that I had suffered a 3/4 inch avulsion fracture of the 7th cervical vertebrae posteriorly. A 3/4 inch fracture in your neck is big enough to put a pencil through. When I came to at the hospital, of course, they put me under painkillers. But when I came to, the doctor looked at me and he said, "You do understand, Mr. Walsh, that you've been given a 1 in a million gift here. Most people who suffer that kind of a fracture in their neck wind up dying because of spinal cord complications. You know, it breaks through all the nerve endings and so forth. But somehow or another, that fracture was in just the right place, centimeters off, you wouldn't be here. But you somehow escaped death. But even more astonishingly, the few who do survive are almost always paralyzed from the neck down. You escaped that as well." So he said, "I consider you my miracle." miracle of my medical practice. I never thought I'd run into anything quite like this. Then he looked at me. I'm lying on the table. He's leaning over me and he says, "So what do you intend to do with the rest of your life?" Because he wanted me to really get what I had been given, an incredible gift. But it got worse.
How can it get worse? You already sound like a country song, Neil.
I did write a country song about this called "It Got Worse."
Oh, no. Okay, keep going.
I couldn't afford the little one-room apartment that I managed to get on top of somebody's garage when my wife and I agreed, well, we would live apart. We'd have, you know, at least a trial separation. I couldn't afford the rent because I was out of work. And nobody would hire me. I was wearing what they call a Philadelphia collar. It's a therapeutic device that holds your head up. And one interview after the other, they'd say, "Well, thank you for coming in. We'll let you know." I never heard back from anybody. Finally, the fourth or fifth person to interview me said, "Mr. Walsh, I got to be honest with you. Nobody's going to hire you as long as you're wearing that therapeutic device around your neck." Because we all realize that one wrong move on the job and we're paying for your hospital bills, your medical bills for the next 5 years. We can't do it. She said, come back here when you're all healed of whatever's going on in your neck. And, you know, we'd hire you in a minute because you have all the qualifications. So now I can't get a job anywhere. And I couldn't pay even the little rent on this little studio, one-room apartment on top of somebody's garage in the backyard. So finally, after about 3 or 4 months of not being able to make the rent, the landlord said, "I have to ask you to leave." And he evicted me. So how does it get worse? I'm now living on the street. I have no place to go. I'm sleeping on the concrete. I'm going from person to person with my hand out. I'm thinking, you know, if this goes on for a week or two, I can manage this. I can do this. But it didn't go on for a week or two. It went on for an entire year. 2 weeks shy of 1 year, to be exact. I'm living out there on the sidewalk, sleeping on the ground, begging people for a dime or a dollar, whatever they could spare, so that I could have a bag of French fries and maybe a hamburger by the end of the day, and losing all of my human dignity. I mean, I have to sneak into McDonald's to go to the bathroom and hope that the manager, and more than one manager did, throw me out of the place. Because you could see, you know, I didn't smell that good. There's no place to take a shower when you're living on the road. My hair is down to the middle of my back. I had one pair of shoes, two pair of pants, three shirts, and that's it. The sum total of my worldly possessions. So I looked obviously like a street person when I walked into the eating establishment. And if the manager saw me, he was right after me saying, "Okay, in and out, in and out." And I didn't even have a place to relieve myself with dignity without the manager demanding that I leave. I said to him through the door of the stall, "Could I at least finish?" Mm. Now, finally, after a year on the sidewalk, I found a little place. I found a little job. I got a part-time job. It was a weekend job. It wasn't a full-time job, but it was just enough money to afford a little space where I could live. At least I could get out of the weather. At least I could, you know, have my own bathroom. And at least I could make just enough money to put a loaf of bread and a couple of slices of cheese in the house and a jar of peanut butter, and I could survive. That's when I woke up at 4:30 one morning, after I was in that little apartment for a couple of weeks. I was furious. I thought, wait a minute, you know, I don't understand. Why is this happening to me? I've got a lot of talent. I'm an intelligent person. You know, what's going on? What in the world have I done to deserve this? And so I picked up a yellow legal pad that was on a coffee table. I sat down on the little used couch that they had put into this little place. And I'm writing an angry letter to God, you know, just as a device, just to get my feelings out, You know, I'm writing this letter. Dear God, what does it take to make life work? I can remember writing, I'm scribbling really, really big because I'm really angry. What have I done to deserve a life of such continuing struggle? And then I wrote my third question. Tell me the rules. What are the rules? I'll play this stupid game called life. Just tell me what the rules are. And after you give me the rules, don't change them, because it felt like the rules of life were changing every 3 weeks. So, you know, what's going on? And then I heard a voice. I would have sworn there was somebody else in the room, that it was so realistic. But the voice, a very gentle voice, simply said, Neil, do you really want answers to all of these questions? Or are you just venting? And my mind says, oh, yeah, you think? Yeah, I'm venting. But if you've got answers, I'd sure as hell like to know what they are. And the voice said to me, another voice kind of like felt like it was more inside my head. It sounded like the sound of one's own thoughts. I call it a voiceless voice, like the sound of your own thoughts. But the voice said, you are sure as hell about a lot of things, but wouldn't you rather be sure as heaven? And I'm writing, what's that supposed to mean? And so God answers my questions. And his answers brought up other questions. And he answered those. And her answers brought up other questions. And she answered those. Now I'm in a question and answer dialogue that I somehow don't want to stop. And so I'm writing from 4:30 in the morning till like 11. Fortunately, it was a Saturday. And I didn't start work until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm writing all morning long until 11 o'clock. And I realized I got to get into the shower and get ready to go to my little weekend job. But I had been writing like for 4 or 5 hours from 4:30 in the morning. And I realized, wow, this is really a fascinating experience. So every morning at 4:26 or 4:29 in the morning, I would be awakened almost automatically and right back to the legal pad, to the yellow legal pad. I'm writing more and more and more and more question answer, question answer, question answer. I'm taking down whatever answer comes to my mind. And I'm asking all the questions that anybody would ask about life. What does it take to make it work? You know, I'm asking questions about sex, about the right livelihood, about diet, about parenting, you know, about, you know, one's livelihood, you know, what I call right livelihood, a career. I'm asking questions about everything. And I'm writing down the answers that I'm receiving. Now, Heather, somewhere in the midst of this process, I received this following message. Neil, you will make of this one day a book, and it will be accessed by many people. Now I thought, now I got you. You know, I thought, part of me was thinking, this is all my imagination. You know, this is just what, you know, what is this? So I thought, if this really is God talking to me, nobody's going to publish a book like this by a guy who said, I mean, can you imagine a publisher going out to the workroom floor and saying to his editors, stop the presses, hold everything. I got a guy here who's talking to God. It's not going to happen. Right. Nobody's going to publish a book like that. So on a dare, I sent my handwritten notes. Not the original copy. I was smart enough to go down to the, you know, little copy place and make Xerox copies. I didn't want to have them all. I couldn't pay a stenographer to have it all typed out. But I sent my handwritten copies, Xerox copies, to a publisher, a small publisher on the East Coast of the United States. I got a call a week later. I couldn't believe it. The guy said, hey, we like this material. This is fascinating stuff. We're going to publish this book. I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, we would like to change the title. We think the title is a bit presumptuous. I said, well, you think? But we're not changing the title. If you're publishing the book, we're going to call it exactly what it was, because I experienced that I was having a conversation with God. What am I going to try to call it? You know, Neil's Great Wisdom, or what am I going to call it? It was a conversation with God. They said, well, okay, if that's the only title you'll let us publish it by, we'll put it out by that title. So they did. And I thought to myself, it's not going to sell 500 copies. Who's going to buy a book by a guy who claims to be talking to God? It's not going to happen. And I was right. It didn't sell 500 copies. It sold 5 million in 37 languages. It was being read around the world. I was getting letters from China, Yugoslavia, from Romania, from Great Britain. And of course, even from Cleveland. And I thought, if this book is being read in Cleveland, wow. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
It completely changed my life. And I loved the candid, you know, because a lot of times when we're talking about God, for some reason, we do it in like this hushed tones and this taboo things, you know, certain topics are off limit. And I love how nothing was off limit when you were in the middle of your conversation, you know, and you even brought up like the really tough stuff like alcohol. And, you know, that's something I've been trying to scream at the top of my lungs for a little while now, being the health professional that I am, is that, you know, there's so many, even health practitioners that at conferences, I'm watching them drink after drink after drink. And it's just like, this stuff is toxic. Like, you guys know, you know, and so thank you. Cause you know, you're saying, you're repeating the hard truths that a lot of people don't want to hear. And sometimes that it needs to be said, right?
Yes. But I wouldn't want people to think that the books just talk about stuff we shouldn't do.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a wide open book that talks really about every aspect of life. And I was astonished by, frankly, what I want to use the word, what I was receiving. I, you know, there were thoughts that I never ever had in my whole life. For instance, just to give you an example of what I'm talking about, at one point I was told there's no such thing as the Ten Commandments. I can remember thinking, what is this? What do you mean there's no such thing as the Ten Commandments? And the answer I got from the God of my understanding was, Neil, sweetheart, who would I command? There's only one of us. You're a part of me. I'm a part of you. Who would I command? And for that matter, who would I punish if you didn't keep my commandments? Would the right hand slap the left? You know, And I, of course, never thought about it that way. I said, well, I can't claim to be one with the divine. God said, how sad that you can't claim that, because that is the truth. Mm. You and I are one. You're a part of me. And I said, wow, I don't understand. I don't know how to hold that. How do I hold that idea? And then God gave me a perfect metaphor. She said, Neil, is a wave a part of the ocean? You ever been on an ocean liner and stood on the deck of an ocean liner and seen the waves? I said, yeah, of course I have. God said, okay. Notice that the wave is not something other than the ocean. It's not separate from the ocean. It's simply an individual arising of the ocean in beautiful, spectacular, powerful form. And when that individual arising is complete, the wave recedes back into the ocean whence it came. That's the relationship that you have with me. You are one with me. You are an individual arising of that which I am. So, Neil, go out there and make waves.
Amen.
So I told him, okay. And they published a book.
Did you ever ask about that time? Because I don't remember reading that. Did you ever ask about the time that you were homeless and what that was about and why you had to be homeless for so long?
Yes. I didn't put it in those exact words because I didn't want to put my whole drama, you know, in front of the people to make it look like I was, you know, begging for some kind of sympathy. But I did ask the fundamental question. Do people have to go through hell to find heaven? Do we all have to have a life? Is life meant to be one thing after the other, you know, that isn't working out, and or that creates a struggle, or that produces a huge challenge in life? And God said, no, It's not necessary. You do not have to go through hell to get to heaven. And I said, well, then why did I have to experience it that way? God said, well, because you were one of the stubborn ones.
Nah.
Yeah, we had to hit you over the head with a 2x4.
I say that quite often. I get hit by the head with a cosmic 2x4. My son and myself both seem to have had a really rough ride of all this. And I think that's why I relate to your story so much, is and being there myself, being very angry with God and wondering what all this was about, and like you wanting to know, just tell me the rules, right? I'll play along, you know, tapping out. Like, I just don't know what the rules are. I don't know what I'm doing. And like I said, it was just, I imagine there's obviously lots of people who can relate. That's why your books have done so amazingly well, is because
that's what happened. Really, I didn't realize it until later, but then it became clear to me that in fact, many, many people, I mean, millions of people could relate to the material in the book. They were having the same kind of experience, and they had the same kinds of questions. Again, as I mentioned, the book talks about diet, parenting, right livelihood, sexuality, human relationships, marriage, you know, the whole plethora of human experience. And I didn't spare the horses. I just asked all the questions that I ever had about God, since I had God on the line anyway. You might as well just go for it. So I asked every question I could imagine. And when the first book took off the way it did and sold, I'm not bragging, just saying, sold so many copies, that we began getting calls from the major publishers in New York City, because the small publisher who put the first book out, that book was purchased from the small publishing house by a major publishing house in New York, the Putnam. Penguin Putnam Publishing Company. They bought the book from the smaller publishing house. And then they asked me, do you have any sisters like this at home? You know, the perennial question. And I said, well, if you're asking me if I continue the conversation, yes, I'm still having the conversation. They said, please send us whatever you've got, which wound up producing books 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8. It turns out now that 9 books of dialogue covering over 3,000 pages have been produced. I'm not going to do any more dialogue books. I've done what I promised God that I would do. And of course, I started in the very first dialogue, in the first book, I said, why me? Why would you choose me to have this kind of experience? And the answer from God was, sweetheart, it's not just you. Please don't get into your ego about this and imagine for a second that it's all about Neil. I'm talking to everybody all the time. The question is not to who am I talking? The question is, who's listening? That's when I came to understand that I was told repeatedly in the dialogue that God is talking to everyone. God lives inside of everyone. That everyone carries divinity and divine energy within them. That's who, in fact, we are. We are an expression of divine energy. So, of course, God, that which is God, lives within us, just like the ocean is found within every one of the waves that arise from the ocean. That was a classic metaphor. So I came to understand that everyone is having a conversation with God all the time. We're simply calling it something else because we don't want to be marginalized. We don't want to be ridiculed. You know, we don't want to be thought of as, you know, strange. So, and we don't want to commit blasphemy. You know, most of our religions, there are 4,000 religions on the earth right now. And most of our religions tell us that we can talk to God, of course, we can all pray to God. But if any one of us dares to suggest that God's talking directly to us, that's an ecclesiastical sin. It's called heresy. It's called apostasy. It's called blasphemy. And so we are discouraged by our religions from saying that God is talking directly to me. So we're going to use whatever words we can use, whatever we can get away with. You know, it was a sudden insight. It was an epiphany. It was an awareness that overcame me. It was women's intuition. You know, whatever words we want to use to describe the same process that I was having. But I actually called it a conversation with God. because that's what I felt that it was. But even the publisher at first did not want to publish it with that title. The first thing they said was, we have to change the title. I said, no, we're not doing that.
I'm glad
so,
you
I'm glad I did.
It's crazy too, like in the new book, so God Talk, it's a collection of other people's experience with talking and speaking, having a dialogue with God, which I didn't realize that that's what the book was about. And there's one section where you were talking about all the different religions that came about coming from a person having dialogue with God. Like, this is not a new thing, right? That this is this type of, you know, conversation with God has been going on for a really long time. But like you said, it, for some reason, we've always thought it was just this chosen person or this these very select few to deliver the messages. And we're finding out, especially in this collection of this book, that it's a lot of people quite often.
Everybody, not just a lot of people. God is talking to everybody all the time. Again, we're simply calling it something else, a hint. Oh, it was a psychic hit. Now, whatever words we can find to describe when something became clear to us all of a sudden, you know, I was awakened, you know, whatever words we want to use, but it's all the same phenomena. That which is divine is simply communicating with us from within us.
This was absolutely amazing. I am on the plane traveling to a Lyme disease conference, and I'm going to read this book right before our conversation. I'm going to do my homework. I was ugly bawling on the plane. Like, these, it wasn't what I expected. And these stories were just so moving. Well, and the one with the doves, oh my gosh, that was,
yeah.
That one was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But I just, and over, and then I'd catch my breath a couple more stories and then back down to the ugly crying again. Like, it's not in a, like a horrific sad way, but just in a very beautiful, moving, and that we are all one and that we all are part of the divine. We, you know, we've been brainwashed for so long, this separatist, you know, BS, and it hurts the heart. Right. And so when the soul is speaking to you in the way that it does through your book, the truth, right, there's not really any response that you can do better than cry, I think, sometimes.
I agree with you. But let me explain to you, if I could, why that book actually came to be. Most authors, myself included, you know, they get published because they've written something that they find interesting, and then they try to find a publisher, you know, and I've been lucky enough to find publishers who will print what I've written. Fair enough. But rarely do authors get a call from the publisher. But in this case, my telephone rang, and it was a publishing company. And they said, would you be interested, would you be willing to write a book helping people understand how they can have their own conversation with God? We want to put in the book not only the stories of other people who've had their own divine intervention, but we want to also have a process that the book could contain that could tell people how it came to pass that you had your own experience and how people could maybe call in that same encounter with and for themselves. So I said, you know, I'd be happy to write such a book. So I did. I looked back into my own experience and I realized that there was kind of a six-step process that I had gone through in order to make that earliest connection and that ongoing connection. And so I wrote the whole first part of the book is all about my experience of conversations with God. And then the book contains the actual six-step process that people can embrace in their own life if they choose to see if it might open them to the same kind of experience in the same way that I had it. And that's why we call the book God Talk, experiences of humanity's connection with the divine.
Absolutely love it. So what were some of your favorite parts about writing a book like this compared to the other stuff that you had done in the past?
Yeah, I should explain to people that this is not a dialogue book. This is not a question and answer book, a dialogue with God. This is a book that explains how that can happen. my favorite part of the book was when I talked about how people can have their own conversation with God if they choose to. And then when I expanded on what I call our opportunity to talk not only with God, but about God, the last part of the book is a statement that I make, covers several chapters, about how it could serve humanity if we did more talking about God. Who and what is God really? What is the point of having a divine, you know, a divine being? What's the point of having a higher power if the world is always such a mess? You know, why doesn't God step in and stop us from doing these things to ourselves that we keep on doing individually and collectively through all the years? What's the point of having a God? So that's my favorite part of the book, where I talk about, you know, how it would benefit humanity if we all talked more about God and not just talked with God.
Amen. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to have you on here, is because, like I said, you're a little different than the majority of the guests that I have on. But, you know, it's more of the conversation that I feel like we should be having in the world is who I have on. And then when this came out and I found out there was an opportunity, I just it made sense to me, because, you know, your book played such a pivotal role in my own health and healing and cleaning up my own life in the middle of a really huge, you know, shitstorm at the time. And then now it's continuing, you know, to guide me to new, beautiful places. And so how could I not share that, right? Like, how could we not have this conversation?
I'm very glad that you have made that choice. Thank you so much. It's been very kind of you to give me the opportunity to tell people about the book, God Talk, and to explain how it all came about. So thank you.
Absolutely.
It's very generous of you and very kind of you.
All right, we're getting close to wrapping up. So what are some final nuggets that you think that people need to have, and where can they find this new book?
Well, you can get the book God Talk any one of a number of places. Most people are obtaining it these days from their online bookstore. You know, there are many online bookstores, the biggest one being Amazon. And there are others as well, where you can just type in the title God Talk, written as one word, G-O-D-T-A-L-K, and just type in God Talk by Neil Donald Walsh. And it'll take you to a page, and then you just obtain the book. It'll be in your house in 48 hours or less, and you can start reading it. So the book is easily available from anyone who sells books, including the big online bookstores. But in terms of, you know, a final thought that I would leave with people, most people who do an interview with me ask me, what is the most important message you ever received from God?
That's a good question. What is the most important message you've ever received from God, Neil?
Strange you should ask. The most important message I received was a response to my own question of God when I wrote down, all right, there's something I don't understand. What is it that I don't understand about life? The understanding of which would change everything. And God answered me immediately. She said, Neil, sweetheart, it's very simple. You think your life is about you, and your life is not about you. It's about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. But when you understand that that's the way you can live your life most profoundly and most beneficially, you will then discover that in the largest sense, your life, it turns out, is about you for a joyful reason. There's only one of us. All things are one thing. So, that's my closing message.
As I'm sucking back, trying to hold back tears, thank you again from the bottom of my heart for saying yes and joining us today. Amazing. And for everyone else, make sure that you go out and get a copy of his new book. If you haven't read his original books, I highly recommend going back and doing that and seeing where it all started. And then make sure that you share, like, and subscribe, you know, this podcast. If there was one little thing that resonated with you, you know, don't keep us a secret. Share it. That's how we lift this world. We lift the consciousness and we change the dialogue, right? Make sure to have a healthy day. Stay tuned.
Hey there. I want to talk to you about an amazing new product called Cellwell. I know many of you have been struggling to find relief from your Lyme disease symptoms or symptoms of long COVID or maybe sinus infections or the flu. The symptoms that take you away from all the things that are most important to you in your everyday life. Cellwell is different from other products. It works at the cellular level to fight inflammation, which is actually the source of your Lyme disease, long haulers, and flu-like symptoms, and so much more. This one product provides relief from the most common symptoms you're experiencing, like fatigue, brain fog, headaches, and joint pain. You'll feel relief in just 2 weeks and getting your life back to all the things that you love to do. This is something you should try in addition to any existing protocols that you are working with. This safe, natural formula really works and has no side effects or drug interactions. A number of Lyme literate doctors are administering it to their patients right now. I've been using Cellwell for 14 days and I absolutely love it, and so does my son. It's really made a big difference in our life. Give it a try. And for more information, go get some for yourself. Go to cellwell.us. That's CELWEL.US. Make sure to put code LYMEBOSS for 10% off. That's LYMEBOSS for 10% off. Get your life back now with Cellwell. Make sure to share the love. Like, subscribe, and share. This information is potentially life-saving. Don't keep it to yourself. Make sure to help spread this message. And if you want to experience less pain, have a brain that works, and have more energy, it starts in the kitchen. Download my free 8-video cooking series, Real Cooking for Real Life. No more excuses. Take charge of your health. Start with the free video series at www.thelimeboss.com. That's LYME. Thank you. Have a blessed day.